Morning, everyone. Thanks again for joining us. Just moving along in our presentation set. So up next, we have pleased to introduce one of the leading licensed producers in Canada. Really, when you look at the current landscape we're in, there's only about five or six licensed producers that have really meaningful market share already. And I think Organigram probably has the best or at least most attractive relative valuation within that group. So with that, pleased to introduce Greg Engel, CEO of Organigram.
Great. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. And welcome everybody online today. So I'm going to dive into the slides pretty quickly here, just so maybe I'll ask the moderator to move to slides. Sorry. Just takes a second here. Good. So as Matt outlined, certainly, you know, Organigram, we are certainly, you know, we're one of the leading licensed producers. We were quick to the market to get a significant number of our products out to the market at the launch of the recreational market back in the fall of 2018. So we're traded on the NASDAQ and the TSX under the OGI symbol. Sorry, just going to the next slide here. So also on the line with me today is Derek West, but I'll just be quickly diving into the presentation. So certainly our standard disclosure. To give you a highlight of our fiscal 2020, so fiscal 2020 for us ended at the end of February of this year. We presented those results back in April. So our net revenue for the quarter was $23.2 million, which was down slightly, or $3.7 million from the previous year, although that had been a big load in for us in terms of the marketplace. And it was down slightly from Q1 of 2020. That was primarily driven by a reduction in wholesale sales. Wholesale sales were new to us and was very opportunistic for us to sell wholesale to other licensed producers in Canada that were looking for high quality product. Of note, though, is our adult rec revenue grew 16% quarter over quarter. So continued growth for us. We have continued to diversify our revenue stream. Certainly, you know, when you look at our overall marketplace in terms of our position, so we've, you know, in Rec 1.0, we certainly had a pretty broad range of products available, and we were one of the leaders in pre-rolls. In Rec 2.0, which we really only just launched in our, in the Q2 for us, that represented 13% of our total revenue. In terms of our average net selling price was just about $5 per gram. And I think, you know, the next bullet's really important in terms of, you know, we've historically been one of the real leaders in terms of the marketplace from a cost of production perspective. So, you know, as an indoor producer, it's one of our big differentiators. Many companies went with large greenhouse, you know, production facilities, and we've seen shuttering of a lot of those facilities due to inefficiencies and or excess capacity of product of that type. Certainly for us, you know, in the quarter, we had back down to close to our lowest cost of production per gram at 53 cents per gram on a cash basis, or 75 cents all in. And I will talk a little bit about our 2.0 products shortly in terms of more detail. So certainly lots of opportunity to drive increased margin on 2.0. We did announce back in early April our plan around COVID-19. I think, you know, as we're all working from home right now, certainly top of mind for everyone. You know, with a state of emergency called early in the province of New Brunswick, where our facility was, we acted quickly in consultation with our employees and the government to, you know, really give the optionality for employees to work from home if possible. We had started that in mid-March, you know, employees working from home. So we've been a full 2+ months now of that. And for those in the production facility, you know, where we could not ensure social distancing, we, you know, we gave employees the option to take temporary layoffs and bridge them to the point where they could access government benefits. So we did, you know, as I said, we made lump sum payments to them. We are covering all of the 100% of all their healthcare costs currently as well. But with that, we've maintained a core group of employees in the facility, and that's allowing us to, you know, to move quickly to bring product to market still. And I'll talk about in a few minutes how we've launched a number of products, even with a much smaller footprint. You know, I think one of the key things, a comment I would make on the province of New Brunswick, is they've managed, you know, COVID very, very well. To date, there's only 120 cases. There's been no deaths in the province. They've started some return back to normal. And we, you know, we've had a number of employees contacting us about kind of returning, and we're evaluating, you know, how we will look to bring some employees back over the next little while. The last bullet here is key though for us. You know, we can supplement, reduction in staff, we've reduced our cultivation footprint, but certainly, we've tried to focus on as much in terms of packaging and processing to get product out. And we do have sufficient inventory to meet that demand. Our facility in general, at the end of our Q2, we're basically at the tail end of our capital spend as a company. We did delay completion of our phase 4C because there was not demand in the marketplace with the delays in Ontario to actually, require the full production out of 4C. So, a strategic decision by us and give us more flexibility going forward to bring other production capacity into that area for Rec 2.0 products. So the remaining capital at the end of Q2 to finish 4C was just around $2 million to allow that area to be fully, kind of not fully operational, but it, that we could start to occupy it and use other areas within the space. Our phase 5 facility, this is our dedicated edibles and derivatives production area and post-harvest processing area. It's 56,000 square feet, although part of it is actually two stories. So it's more than 56,000 square feet. It's been designed to EU GMP standards, and it's been licensed in two stages, certainly in December and then March. The initial area was licensed to allow us to produce our chocolates, which we brought to market initial orders by the end of February. And, at the end of February, we had around $11 million left to spend, although we do not expect to spend that full $11 million in the current quarter because of COVID-19 and some of the impacts that has on finishing certain types of areas. So good news is, for us, from a chocolate perspective, that line's been fully operational and operating. And then, from a vapes perspective, we've been able to use automation and bring vapes to market as well successfully. So just quickly go into a couple updates for us. We've been very focused on the cultivation side of expanding our Rec 1.0 products. So been bringing new strains to market, our Limelight, which is a 20 to 27% THC, and our El Dorado, which has been an award-winning strain for us, which is a hybrid at 18 to 20%. We recently have now announced as well Trailer Park Buds coming to market in a large SKU format. I think one of the big differentiators for us in that value segment is that, the majority of the product that's out there in value isn't necessarily strain specific. So this product is strain specific. It's indoor grown, so certainly very good quality. Certainly initial response has been very well received in the market. We also launched in the current quarter, have made our first shipments to a couple provinces, our Inc. Organics line as well. So just go to our 2.0 products now. If I look at, our vape pen portfolio, we took a very strategic staged approach in terms of which products we would bring to market when. We know the 510 category, which is our Trailblazer Torch at the bottom of the slide, is the largest category. So that was our first product launch. We shipped, all three products in that platform out on December 17th and started shipments then. And then we staged in the following based on the market size. So the disposable Edison pen by Feather, we launched right at the end of Q2 in February. And then subsequently in this quarter, we've launched the PAX Arrow that was a partnership with PAX on their platform. So that's more the premium segment. A couple of key things on those products, certainly, what makes the Edison pen unique, for example, is that it's breath activated or inhalation activated, which we've seen good response from in the marketplace. And with the PAX Arrow, we're one of only three companies of the six that have partnerships who actually have PAX Arrow pods on the market right now. So, and our Trailblazer products, has been very well received. Just going to our chocolates, I think certainly for us, we've invested heavily in chocolates. We see, when you look at the edibles market, chocolates and soft chewables or gummies are the two leading categories. We felt we could really differentiate ourselves with our chocolate line. We invested $15 million in a world-class leading automation line, which, is not only producing the chocolate, it's packaging, it's excise stamping, it's actually cartoning it. So again, this is one of the areas we've been able to continue on production with even reduced staffing in the facility. And, you know, for us, we did not get a significant amount of product out in the previous quarter, but since that, we've been able to supply, you know, all of the provinces in the country that have, that allow for edibles, so that our Edison Bites, both milk and dark chocolate, are listed in all the provinces that allow for edibles. And the same with our three vape pen portfolios, they are listed and available in the PAX isn't available everywhere yet, but it is listed in all the provinces that allow for vaporizable products. The last kind of near-term product for us in terms of the 2.0 marketplace is our, you know, proprietary nano emulsion emulsification technology. So we have developed a dried powder formulation, which based on the pharmacokinetics and the molecular size, we expect to have an initial absorption of 10 to 15 minutes of the cannabinoids, which will allow people to microdose and effectively, you know, really dose titrate in the right manner as they're, you know, utilizing the product. I think, you know, for us, this product has been a lot of excitement and interest in it, both from the public and the private retailers out in the marketplace. This is one product, though, however, that has been delayed because of COVID-19. So while we do have the equipment on site, we're not able to bring in the manufacturers to do the final certification process. We've not allowed anyone external to our facility other than in areas that are truly still construction zones, which is, you know, is only a few small areas right now to finish off in phase five. So in an operational area, we're not allowing anyone external into the facility, so we can't get the final certification. So, you know, we still don't have a timeline. It's very much dependent upon when we move to open that up, but we're excited about it and the opportunity it it presents to the market. So I'll dive in here just in terms of a little bit in terms of our liquidity and capital position. You know, at the end of the quarter, we had $41 million in cash and short-term investments. We did have, we were offside on, we did have a violation on one of the covenants on our debt facility, which is a more traditional debt facility with BMO and a syndicate of three other financial institutions. Because we'd had positive historical results, you know, 5 to 7 of the last quarters, we'd had positive adjusted EBITDA. The structure of that debt was, you know, at a lower interest rate, as well as more traditional covenants that you would see in more traditionally structured companies. So we were able to get a waiver, you know, of the kind of area that we had a violation on the fixed coverage ratio covenant. Until the end of May, we're currently in negotiations with BMO and the syndicate to negotiate this, renegotiate the structure. While there's no guarantee that, you know, we'll be able to renegotiate that structure, we're confident that, you know, working with BMO as the lead lender in the syndicate, that we'll be able to work through that. At this point, there's still $30 million that remains undrawn on the total term loan of $115 million. And there is a revolver against accounts receivable up to 25. And again, while there's no guarantee, we're certainly confident that if necessary, we'll be able to draw the remaining $30 million. In the Q2 of last year, so in December, we launched an ATM program, which was completed before the end of Q2. So under that program, we had gross proceeds of approximately $55 million and net proceeds of $52.9 million. And then further to strengthen our balance sheet, we announced a new ATM program on April 22nd, which would allow us, you know, if necessary, to give us some flexibility to issue shares for up to $49 million. So these have both come under a base shelf that we filed last year for $175 million. For us at this point, you know, any ATM proceeds be used to fund additional capital. You know, I think we don't have near-term significant capital needs. For us, as I said, you know, we're at the tail end of our capital spend. But certainly there are areas where incrementally we can look to increase automation and improve efficiency. Certainly, you know, it also gives us flexibility for general corporate purposes and to repay indebtedness overall. Go on to the next slide here. So, you know, I think in summary, when you look at how we're positioned for the marketplace. You know, we've seen a very strong response to our Rec 2.0 products. You know, certainly what we saw in the early days on the 510 cartridges, for example, was that, you know, we had proven history of using a provider that a partner company that we have a consulting relationship with, the Green Solution in Colorado, had been using for years. So we knew that, you know, the hardware was very high quality. And also, you know, we were not going to see leaking or failures. And, you know, that was critical to the market. And we did see some, you know, significant consumer complaints out in the market with some of the hardware that was launched, both in the disposable area as well as the 510 area. You know, and certainly launching Feather and PAX Era now have been, you know, expanding to meet that we can meet every market segment. And our chocolate portfolio, where, you know, we've seen very good consumer response. You know, I think one of the things that's interesting when we look at the overall, you know, current situation under COVID, we had done some market research, which we announced a couple months ago, to talk about how consumers in Canada would utilize edibles. And one of the key things that we saw there was that, you know, edibles in general are more of an at-home type of, you know, experience that people are looking for. So, you know, the ability to continue to supply and meet that market, even with, you know, what's been happening overall with, you know, curbside pickup or local delivery in provinces like Ontario and some stores being closed. I mean, edibles are certainly very highly desirable. I think for us, when we look at chocolates, we do have additional follow-on lines that we will be launching on the bar side in the future, and we're excited about those as well. You know, we've built excellent partnerships across the space, both with our suppliers, both retailers, public and private, you know, and on the regulator side as well. We've been working closely with the government on a number of initiatives. And even when COVID-19 started, I think a number of things that, you know, we were one of the leading companies discussing with them on changes, you know, to the regulations temporarily to allow companies to operate more efficiently in the near term. You know, we are focused very much on maintaining a lean cost structure. That's certainly been our history, and prudent cost management has been a big part of who we are. I didn't mention at the start, I did reference Derek West, who joined us as CFO. Derek had previously been CFO at a publicly traded REIT, and had experience both in the public and private market on the financial side. So proven CFO, he'd been on our board for a couple of years and had been chair of our audit committee. And so he was able to join the company. And at the same time, Paulo De Luca, who's our chief strategy officer, who had been CFO, had shifted a pretty significant part of his role to focusing on strategy. So it was an opportunity to bolster our leadership team by bringing Derek in and having Paulo take on full-time responsibility for the CSO role. You know, we do have significant inventory on hand. That was one of the things that allowed us to do the temporary voluntary layoffs with our staff, was that we can leverage, you know, not only the majority, you know, a lot of the inventory we have, certainly from an extract perspective, as well as flower. And we are focused, as I said, on automation. And you know, as a company, we're very committed to remaining focused on disciplined capital allocation. So with that, I will just stop sharing my screen here. And I know Matt had to drop off, but we've got maybe a minute or so. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer. No. Okay. Well, it doesn't look like there's any questions directly or without Matt. Maybe we're not able to take in any questions. But again, thank you everyone for your time today, and take care. Thanks.